Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has over 120 podcasts containing information about aviation technologies and pilot experiences for general and business aviation, from home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech. Plain Talk provides information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 2,200 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years experience in the technology, telecommunications, and aviation industries.
We're here at Oshkosh AirVenture 2024 in probably one of the coolest booths and some of the most interesting people, the folks from Porto Aviation and the Ryzen. And we have in the Plain Talk cockpit, Andrea Venturini. Did I say that right?
Yeah, almost right. Andrea Venturini. From Florence, Italy.
Where you have really good Italian food.
Yes, the best, yeah, the probably. Best.
And you did something absolutely amazing, a cross the Atlantic in a small light sport aircraft, nonstop, two adults. No refueling. Amazing.
Standard tanks, no ferry tanks, two people on board at a speed of close to 165 knots and covering 1,850 nautical miles. It was a little bit impossible flight. Everybody didn't believe it. And we tried to tell the press. We had a little presentation at the famous Friedrichshafen show in Europe. But other than that, it was kind of unknown to the most.
So we'll just say that again, because these are incredible numbers. 165 knots, 1,850
nautical miles, nonstop, two people on board, no ferry tank, and with the last piece of lag, because of the wind was 20, 30 knots, you have to take in consideration that this flight is taking place from Europe to U.S., so that's westward, and you cannot find a day which you don't have 20 or 30 knots. At least you might have 100 knots. Of course, we chose the only day possible, with the best day in the summer, probably. At the last leg, getting close to Goose Bay Harbor, just to make things in a safety matter, we slowed down to 130 knots, and we were cruising at 2.2 gallons an hour.
Amazing. 2.2 gallons an hour. And I understand you landed with three hours reserves.
Yeah. We started looking at alternative landing because Goose Bay, funny enough, we didn't know. I mean, at least I didn't notice that is... That is quite far away from the coast. So therefore, when you see the coast, you have to consider another hour of flying. Right. So you think you made it, but you haven't really made it until you. So we want to make sure that if something happened at the last minute, and you know, because the wind, and so we found a gravel.
And being a Canadian, I do recognize that Goose Bay is absolutely in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly. And that one, I was a little bit ignorant. I was thinking to see roads and other towns. Nothing. There's,
It's you and the polar bears.
Yes. I never seen so many icebergs in my life. But the flight was pretty much non-eventful. It was very, everything went by the book. We were very sure, you know, we're not too crazy people. We did the flight in total safety. Biggest, enemies were two. The weather and, sad enough, bureaucracy.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that the bureaucrats weren't happy campers about you doing something incredible.
We don't want to be polemic, but it will have to come out. What happened, it was very sad. We 7 months prior, we contacted the UK Aviation CAA, and we were hoping to get a special pass because of the sport achievement of the flight. And they seemed at first to be, you know, sympathetic. But then, you know, one excuse after another, they started asking so many equipment that we bought. We spent a lot of money to make sure that everything was done in a safely manner. And we had so many. Another thing we could talk is that now this plane, which is VFR only, it is equipped, fully equipped, and is capable of IFR navigation. Therefore, that will be something that, you know, the lawmakers will have to take in consideration. It's a complex airplane. It has retractable gear, pitch propeller. It's not an easy airplane to manage, but it handles like exactly like a Piper, or so even it looks very looks fast. It just, things happen a little bit faster. So especially at takeoff, you have to make sure that you check all the boxes and your check, you know.
Of course.
Yeah.
How many flight hours do you have in your logbook?
I'm a glider pilot that turned into aviation. I'm going to have a total of 1,000 hours.
Oh, wow.
But they have been done. It's not the amount, which when you talk to people, 10,000, 5,000. But I've done 1,000 hours in only 4 or 5 years. So that's what makes it, for me, special. I took a role in Europe to become an ambassador in the gliding world. I manage the most successful page on the internet, on Facebook. It's called Gliding and Soaring. Very specific, very a Taliban. I don't accept anything that is not gliding. But I got involved with the Italian gliding team. I was a team captain last year. So I start traveling around the world representing my country. And my goal is to get the people that have not had the luck that I have, that never got exposed to aviation, especially the youngster, but also the older like me. I'm going to be 60 soon. And, you know, about 10 years ago, I never seen a glider or a plane. And
amazing.
And that's what I've been doing. Making a passion. I have a motto that I use a lot. It's share, very simple. Share the passion. Because I think some accomplished pilots have a tendency to be a little bit hermit. They don't share their success. The champions tend to close themselves in and they don't want to share. I think the best, I was lucky. I teamed up with glider champions that they got me involved. And in this particular case with the Reason plane is the CEO, Alberto Porto, a genius, an engineer, expert in fluid dynamics. He saw in me somebody very enthusiastic and somebody to have a great partner. I have to say this, some very accomplished pilots say, oh, Alberto, next time you go, you know, you should have told me, I would have come. And the most gratifying comment from Alberto Porto was, well, no for this. I'm sorry, Andrea was the man for this task. And so...
Well, so when you were doing the cross-Atlantic flight, what altitude did you go at?
We were supposed to be lower than 5,500, but we...
5,500 feet or
meters?
Yeah,
feet. Our flight was mainly between 7 and 9,000 at the most. We had a, you know, we talked with the ATC, with the Oceanic Center. They knew, and so everything was, they did ask us to get lower, but we said that we're not capable. We had icing condition below, and so we couldn't do that.
Wow.
And so I think the big step in the future will be to give us a higher level. I mean, just to be clear, we were flying at 7,000 feet. We were talking with the airliner on the frequency. The first guy was a super nice guy, Delta 95. Delta 95 did a relay for us. He contacted the Oceanic Center in Shenwick, and he gave us all our positioning. All that system worked very well. They were very helpful, the airliner. They were interested in our record flight. And I remember when we told them what we were doing, they couldn't believe it. And they said, oh, I'll look you up. And we have had several people that after we landed, they said, oh, we heard you on the radio. Oh, you guys are amazing.
Well, you are amazing. I'm curious, as you said, the bureaucracy of getting the flight done and some of the restrictions. Were you required to wear survival suits?
Yeah, well, we had everything. We had, let's start what our equipment was. We had two survival suits, neoprene, for the cold water, and we wore that. We had, we had a life jacket, self-inflatable. We had a dinghy in the back that could be automatically deployed with automatically inflated, and that was a four people, so we wouldn't have been crammed in. We had a special survival bag for 3 days. We calculated a 3 days survival time.
Did that include red wine?
We didn't.
No
Italian
red wine.
We had energy drinks, so we didn't. Okay. We didn't. We did drink. I have to say, we did. We toast after the landing. We had some prosecco.
Nice, nice, very nice. Was it uncomfortable flying in?
I'm used. I think Alberto flies a lot more than me on a regular basis. I'm a glider pilot. We do our average flights are between 4 and 6, 7 hours. I've flown before in Scotland because I'm licensed in Scotland originally, and I had a record for flying 9.5 hours on a glider plane. So that was something I've done already, and no, it wasn't for me. It wasn't at all very uncomfortable. I mean, of course, after a while your butt start, but you move and you start moving. You drink, you eat something. I had a focaccia, Italian focaccia, I brought with me.
Any, you know, I don't want to be
any little moments.
Yeah, any little.
Well, there has been a moment. I would say the more critical moment was in Scotland as we approached Stornoway. By the way, then we'll have to talk to thank the Stornoway people because we landed in an airport that has never been used before for this kind of flight. Everybody knows Wick, yep. Scotland. That's the typical exit port. We open a new route. We think it's going to make a change. Already, two more Ryzen flew through Stornoway the other day, and so I got in touch with the tower people at Stornoway. So as we approached Stornoway, unfortunately, we were 8,000 feet. We were above clouds, and we had to get below clouds. And that was the moment with the highest mountains in UK. So high mountains, a layer of clouds, that created a critical moment.
Did you find an opening?
Oh, yeah. No. There was no problem. You know, we got no problem. But, you know, but we had to be aware. It was a little bit high tension. We have synthetic vision, which, of course, it does help us a ton. But, you know, there was a moment in which things, you know, had to be, you know, taken care of the right way.
You know, you've done something absolutely extraordinary. I mean, what's the single most memorable event?
I think in the middle. It's the middle of the ocean that you're so far for. The communications start to deteriorate, so you're pretty much on your own. We had a satellite phone, which we didn't use. We did a text message, but we never called anybody. And then we had a tracker, a GPS tracker. The people at home could see us. But honestly, for me, the very rewarding moment is really the feeling of doing something special and that people didn't think it was doable. And the only moment you really feel that is when you are in the middle of the ocean and you are hours and hours away from, no matter where you go, you're not going to be, you know, less than 3 or 4 hours north, south, east, and west.
So with this extraordinary event, what's going to be the impact with the regulators?
Well, as I was saying, so far the light aircraft, they've been looked by the big guys as the ugly duckling. So, you know, we don't let them do this. You don't get in Class B. You know, basically the regulation is trying to keep out of the big picture the small aviation. But when you have a plane that is capable of using only 42 gallons for the whole Atlantic crossing, 42 gallons of fuel, and you leave in the morning at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, and by lunch, thanks to the timing, the zoning, you land at lunch at Goose Bay in Canada. I mean, that's something that people didn't think it was possible. And so you have to take that into account. You have to start thinking, what can we do now to adjust? Technology goes much faster than bureaucracy. Bureaucracy is a dinosaur and wants to stay in the back in a different era where we are the, you know, Alberto is a genius. Alberto is not an ordinary guy. He's done extraordinary. He already crossed the ocean once from Italy to Brazil.
Amazing.
In 2017, and that was another epic event that he did. So he's not new to this kind of thing, but it takes this epic events to tell people what the plane, this special plane, is capable of. Because even the media try, you know, I I'm not going to make drop names, but I'm very disappointed with EAA. They were very interested in my stories, and then they kind of dropped dead. I tried to call them. They don't answer my email, and I don't know why. I mean, this plane should be in the plaza. This plane made history.
Absolutely.
And we should be given the right, you know, the right credit. But, hey, that's I guess it's, you know, when things are hard, hard time makes good things, and good things made, you know, there's a wave and up and down. So
sure.
I think so far all the obstacle has been a challenge, and then we've been able to, you know, to overcome the obstacle.
And as you've successfully overcome these obstacles, you've really shrunk time and distance.
Yes, we did. We studied to do another record that we kind of abandoned because of bureaucracy. The idea was to leave at 5:30 in the morning from Italy and land at 9:30 at night in Oshkosh, which meant 20 in one day. Thank to the, of course, the 7-hour difference, but it would have been the same day stamp. You know, leaving the 14th. Of June from Florence and landing the 14th of June in Oshkosh. We were very close, but we decided that didn't want to push the limit. We were satisfied with the accomplishment.
Next year?
Well, we'll see. Well, I'm looking forward for more.
2025, that's got a nice ring to it.
Well, I have, maybe I can use their podcast as a first announcement.
Of course.
When you have a dream in your, in English you say bucket list. We say a dream in the drawer in Italy. You have a dream closing a drawer. And so when you have a dream like me, I started working on a project 2 years ago to do a solo flight with using the Reason, because that is the right plane, a solo flight around the world, stopping, meeting dignitaries of countries and government people, bringing a peace message. We're now in a, you know, everybody knows what's happening in the Middle East. And I thought, even more now, I feel strong that, so I'm going to try to set up, get a sponsorship, because obviously I need some people to back me up. But the idea is that this flight proved that I can do, it's no longer a dream. It could be, become a reality.
Well, that's absolutely amazing. Any final thoughts for the Plane Talk audience?
Well, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to talk about this amazing plane. I think you keep an eye on what's happening with Porto Aviation, because there is more project, more engineering being worked right now. I'm not going to tell you what it is. You can imagine. We have a two-seater, so we're going to move. The company has been quoted on the stock market in Italy, so it's no longer a little family-run. Alberto is very, capable of bringing out new standards, new frontier. You know, we're gonna, you know, get farther.
So there's going to be a four-place version of Horizon.
Well, there is a study. There is, you know,
take your friends and family.
Yeah, exactly. And if you think of the characteristic, the technical characteristic, the performance of this plane, if you then take it on a four-seater. I mean, you can imagine what that's going to make on the market, you know?
And then are you thinking about doing any, like, electric versions of Horizon?
No, that one, we don't have the know-how at the moment to implement. You see, one thing we kind of missed at the beginning, and that it's a good, actually, reminder why we made what we made and how we made it, is that the Reason plane holds the record of the fastest ultralight in the world.
Wow.
238 knots. Almost close to 450 kilometers. Yeah, 230 knots. So when you take that performance and speed and you swift it into endurance, into low consumption, because you don't go 70-80% percent of the power, but you go very low. As I said to you, the last leg to a certain way, we slow down so much, we got to 2.2 gallons. And so you can go, we can cover 6,000 nautical miles. I mean, we can do the impossible.
Amazing. So you could redo Lindbergh's flight.
Definitely. Definitely.
Amazing. Well, again, thank you so much for being part.
No, thank you, Phil. If you ever come to Italy,
I'll look you up.
We'll look us up, and you get some decent
food
for sure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plain Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plain Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at plaintalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at plaintalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast.